Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this November 1st edition, COVID-era edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That is WBAI on the Pacifica Network in New York in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right. The York College Radio Network is also plugged into our program. Delighted to be coming to you today, Ashley, from the WBAI studio. So, hey, I'm just enjoying Ashley, being in the premises today and hanging out with my good buddy Reggie and so forth. So if I get the numbers wrong, he'll just smack me on the wrist right across the aisle and we'll be ready to go. But anyway, today we have a feature. The first Monday of every month is our monthly State of Newark Report with the Honorable Raj J. Baraka, whom we are anticipating will be calling in shortly because he is the guest that we have the first of every month. And we do that because the Honorable Raj J. Baraka is a progressive mayor who has a progressive program. And we're going to ask him immediately about the student protest at Howard University because he's a graduate of Howard University and is scheduled to speak at a webinar this afternoon. But we'll be discussing other topics with him as well. We're also at the bottom of the hour going to open up the professor on the soapbox, and we're going to ask you to call in a couple of specific questions so you can wander and drift a little bit if you choose to. But we're going to ask you about the bill tomorrow, supposed to be a big deal today or tomorrow, when the two bills, the progressives have the slimmed down versions of the bills, whether or not you think the progressives should vote for them or not, these infrastructure bills. Secondly, we'll be asking about Biden's poll numbers. They seem to be slipping, and the issue becomes whether or not, what is it? What's going on with Biden's poll numbers? Why is he actually slipping in the polls? So at the bottom of the hour, get ready to rock with us. The professor on the soapbox, I'll give you the number right now, and I hope you get it right. File it. 212-209-2877 is the right number to call at the bottom of the hour. Now we're honored to be joined by the Honorable Raj J. Baraka. He is mayor of the city of Newark, New Jersey. Newark, we should say, back in the day. Mayor Raj Baraka, welcome again to Vantage Point. Mayor Baraka?
Hello, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing fine. Just heard the news that, you are proud. I was thinking about this the other day because I have opportunity. In fact, I happen to talk to, I think that, a number of people who graduated out of Howard University. And I was talking to someone the other day, and I was thinking about that, the fact that you had gone there and whatever. And then I hear on the airways, there's this big protest going down at Howard University, and you're going to be on a webinar this evening. So we just heard that advertised on the WPFW, WBAI News. So tell us about that protest. What are your thoughts, and what will you be saying to a new generation of people who are taking up a cause?
I'm trying to get on to find out information and what's going on. How can I help? It's really that simple. I think the Howard students have a history of protesting. A couple of the alumni got in touch with me, but also they've been in there for a considerable amount of days, which is probably the longest protest that the university has ever seen, honestly. 19 days.
Right.
They've been in there, probably more than that now, but 19 days, it's an incredibly long time, almost a month. I mean, the longest we were in there, we were there for about 4 days.
Right, right.
And I know in 67, they were in there for a couple of days as well, but 19 is a bit much.
Right, it is. And I think it's important, too, because, Howard University, and I don't say this in any derogatory way, it's kind of seen as the Harvard of black America, and yet these students are raising basic grievances about conditions and whatnot on the campus. And it's in the spirit of Fanon, who said, each generation out of relative obscurity must discover its mission and fulfill it or betray it, and to make sure that our historically black colleges and universities are toeing the line and delivering not only in terms of the academic realm, but in terms of the conditions, seems to be a good thing in terms of students at least raising the issue. I think it was Kevin Powell I was talking to, and I think were you and Kevin in there at the same time at Howard?
Yeah, Kevin went to Rutgers. He didn't go to Howard.
Oh, he didn't? Okay. Somehow I thought Kevin went to Howard, and I was thinking about that. Anyway, let's get back to the State of Newark report. I have to ask you, Mayor Baraka, there's this controversy over here in New York that you're aware of, where the municipal workers are, some of them, not all of them, maybe 10 or 12% of them, are taking the position that they are not willing to work or to adhere to the mandate that Mayor de Blasio has issued in terms of, you know, vaccinations in order for public safety. And I'm just wondering how that's being handled in Newark. I think we've talked before about the fact that there seems to be great progress being made. So how is that issue of mandates or the lack thereof for being handled as far as your administration with the municipal workers?
Yeah, we had pushback from the same group, fire mostly, a little police, but mostly fire, a couple of nurses. But other than that, I mean, we are marching forward. You know, we resolved our issues over here. We are, people are adhering to the mandate unless they have a medical or religious exemption here in the city. I just think that these folks have to be held to a higher standard than everybody else. I mean, people want to, you know, you're a police officer, you're a fireman, you know, obviously, you know, in order to do these jobs, there are specific things and requirements that you must, you know, be a part of as a condition of your employment. Public safety is one of them. Like, you have to make sure that you are, that you do not have coronavirus or some other kind of thing that is infecting people while you're out there. I mean, it's just, it seems to me that that's a condition of their employment, or should be, and they should be held to a higher standard where that goes. I mean,
right. Well, certainly, and I certainly agree with that. I take some heat on these airways because we have some people who take the position that, you know, this is a personal choice. This is, and, you know, and that may be true, and that it's a matter of freedom. But, you know, if it were just me, myself, and I, that'd be one thing. But we're talking about we, us, and our. You know, how does my behavior affect others? And if I am to serve,
it is a personal choice, and so you have a choice not to work there.
Right.
Nobody's forcing you to be a police officer, right, or forcing you to be a fireman. Nobody's forced you to do all of those things. They ain't forcing you to take the pension. They're not forcing you to deal with, have qualified immunity like nobody else. They're not forcing you to do all of these things. These are privileges that you get that are associated with a job. There's conditions of the employment to be able to work there. Like the court said here, like, you know, nobody's stopping your choice. What they're telling you is this is a condition of your employment. If you choose not to get it, then you can go find a job somewhere else. I mean, that's your choice that you're making. You're making a choice not to do it.
Right, absolutely. Right?
And if you choose not to do that, then there are consequences with the choice you made, just like there's consequences with any choices people make.
Right. Well, I'm glad you made that clarification. And Mayor, you're doing great work around community economic development and economic development in general. Everybody's trying to get the economy back and rolling. But I guess I would appreciate you sort of commenting on how important it is to tame this monster, this COVID, so that economic development and jobs and everything can thrive even more fully than they are now.
Yeah, I mean, we're suffering in this economy. People know it. Nobody's suffering more than black and brown people, you know, working class folks, business, small businesses, whatever, are suffering more. You know, we're 200% more likely to die from COVID than anybody else, right? And it is affecting our businesses and affecting growth in communities. People not coming out. The businesses aren't making money. Places will close down. All this will affect the economy, and the best way to get this thing going is to get rid of it, right? To get rid of COVID, or to at least get it into a place where it's manageable for most of the country, right? As long as people keep traveling and going back and forth to places, and there's uneven kind of, our response to COVID is uneven, then the results will be uneven, and we'll never be able to get out of this thing because you have some states that are doing nothing and states that are doing everything they can. And so the results are uneven all over the country.
Right. I'm very pleased, and you have always reported that people are responding positively to the messaging that you've been putting out in your administration, people volunteering, going out and working in the community. And that's the way it really ought to be. I want to go to another topic, Mayor. I think it was Reverend Edward Pinckney. I may be wrong, but I remember him as a community activist and so forth, because if we thought that the situation in Michigan could get worse, could get any worse than it previously was, now all of a sudden we see Benton Harbor. It's like a horrific situation there. One of the things that I found that was encouraging at one level, and why your leadership is important, why your administration is so important, when people were talking about what could be done and what was possible, I heard maybe it was either CNN or MSNBC, one of the two, Reverend Edward Pinckney. And guess what? He referred to Newark. He said Newark has a problem, he said, but under the leadership of Mayor Baraka, they are taming the problem. They are an example of what can be done. I don't know whether you heard that or not, but I'm wondering whether or not there is any exchange, whether the people from Benton Harbor have been in touch with you at all in terms of getting some ideas about how to attack this problem.
They haven't. I mean, not with me directly, for sure. So, I mean, so that's a pleasant surprise.
I'm actually going to try to connect with him, and I'm going to, you know, try to make that connection, because I think, but if what I'm saying, it was so encouraging though, that they know what's going on, the work that the city is doing, and the residents of Newark should be aware, that they're pitching together, working together, getting these lead replacement lines. I mean, the lead replacement done in record time is something that, you know, that people are taking notice of. And we talk about it almost every time that you're on the airway. And I know last time you said you're just about finished.
Yep. And I would say in a couple of weeks we'll be able to have a press conference and make the announcement.
Now, gun violence continues to plague black communities all across this country. I mean, it's one of those issues that tugs at, you know, our hearts and our souls, that so many young people, you know, and sometimes innocent people just getting caught up in this drug violence and being killed, the funerals, the, you know, the aches and pains of and the agony of a community, of communities. You've had some success your administration has had some success, you know, working on this issue. And I'm wondering whether or not you would share your thoughts on the formula. What is it going to take to really get this gun violence and this senseless killing inside of our communities under control?
Well, I think there's a lot to be done there. I mean, obviously, we have to have a community response, a community-led response to that. Just like we created the Office of Violence Prevention, we have to have relationship between community-based organizations and city government to help reduce violence and crime throughout the neighborhoods. We have to do conflict resolution, and so we treat it like a public health issue. You have to do treatment, right? Obviously, prevention, you know, and education. And we try to do those three things in communities where there are high levels of violence. And we target those neighborhoods, you know, target those young people for intervention strategies, target them for prevention strategies, target them for treatment strategies in those communities. And the police really work along with them, and instead of doing this big wide net that they normally do, which they use to violate people's constitutional rights, they really target in on folks that are committing the most violent crime in the city, you know, and really laser-like focus on that. And that has an impact on almost all other crimes as well. And, you know, we try to do this in a cooperative kind of way. And so we have had some levels of success. We've experienced the uptick over the summer, and we're jumping all over it now, as a matter of fact. So, and we're still at 50-year lows in homicides. Mm. So,
and Mayor, how important is it that you have had a history, even before you became mayor, of that kind of conflict resolution, intervention, getting to know some of the folk in the community who are, you know, who may be involved in these activities and so forth? How important is it that the city take the lead, and someone like yourself? I mean, I see instances you're on the spot. You go out into the community. You're with the families. You're trying to prevent retaliation and things of that nature. How important is that?
Well, it's extremely important. I mean, you know, there are things that you have to do That's the intervention and prevention, trying to get in the community, solve people's problems, stop it before it turns into something deadly. Matter of fact, we're visiting schools all week. I mean, all last week we visited schools, and we're going to do some more, coming up, trying to stop the kind of violence that's happening in schools that spills over into the streets. We're doing conflict resolution and intervention there. So we have to continue to do those things.
Right. Talking about education, Mayor Baraka, and of course you were, a teacher and spent a lot of time as an educator as well, such an incredibly well-rounded background of work. How important is the, and I say this against the backdrop of quote unquote critical race theory and teaching of history of what really happened in this country coming under attack in places like Virginia, where it may be a major issue in tomorrow's, the outcome of tomorrow's election there, these kind of cultural wars that, dare I say, these white nationalists and white power advocates are putting forth. But how important is it to have something like the Amistad curriculum? I don't know what the status of that is, but how important is it to have really in schools education about ourselves, about our history and culture in terms of a part of the treatment to reduce violence and create wholesome communities?
Oh, that's key. Knowledge of who you are, how you got into the situations that you're in, your community, all of those things gives you a sense of pride, a sense of purpose. Other than the negative stuff that people try to put on you, it almost wakes you up and it gives you the fire that you need to hunger and thirst for information, for knowledge, for the desire to make yourself better, your community better, all of those things, and push back against this kind of mainstream culture and ideas that try to diminish you. So I think that is a first step, right? Is a first step enlightening people so they begin to pull themselves out of the muck and mire. I just had to answer that question to a reporter before who asked me, similarly, how do we deal with trauma in our community? How do we, make kids fight back against trauma in their neighborhood? First, I told them they have to identify that what they're going through is traumatic,
right?
That it is trauma, and the historical implications of that trauma, where did it come from? And it didn't begin with them. They're not in this situation because their mother didn't know how to balance their checkbook, or they didn't have financial literacy, or they were just born evil and incompetent, and these things happened to them and their families. There's a whole systemic reason why these conditions exist, and instead of perpetuating these conditions, here's a way to get out of it. Enlighten people and give them a pathway. And I think that is inspirational enough to get people moving, and that's what we should be doing.
Right, and again, Mayor Baraka, you not only have you been inspirational in that regard, but continue to put together programs for men. The men's circles that you've been creating, trying to get people into economic development and education, and along those lines, also with working with the women and the young people as well. I don't know in this COVID era whether you've been able to continue to have those rallies. I will never forget the one I attended at the Robert Treat Hotel. I mean, a thousand people in a room, saying hold the line, and you inspiring them to step up. How is that? Is that continuing, or has the COVID sort of slowed that down?
No,
seems to be.
We just had two men's meetings. We had one last week. It was great, and. So we still going forward with it.
Wonderful, 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 wonderful. Shifting to the national scene a little bit, because what's happening at the national level is incredibly important to the city of Newark and the state of New Jersey. Two big elections coming up. A lot of people are focusing tomorrow on Virginia and looking at New Jersey as well, the governor's races. And a lot of it, there's been a lot of debate and discussion about the bills, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, as well as the Build Back Better bill, which is the human infrastructure bill. And I'm just wondering how you come down in this debate, because there's some disappointment, and a lot of negotiations have gone on. I mean, initially, people were talking about $6 trillion, then it got shaved to $3.5 trillion, and Now it's down to $1.75 trillion. And I'm just wondering, even at that $1.5 trillion, will that have an impact?
Yeah, I mean, any amount of money will have an impact, but I think the more, I don't think we allow them, should allow them to take the social aspect of it out of it. All of those things are important, whether you're talking about education, free education, or child tax credits, or, you know, nursery, I mean, preschool for families and mothers, all of those things, debt forgiveness, all of that is, incredibly important. And we need that more than just building bridges, right, and tunnels. So all of those things, the social stuff is what the struggle is about. When it was okay when it was the New Deal, right, people was putting money in because they thought they were helping poor and working class white families coming out of the war, and money was put together around that. This is, this is targeting these communities that have been neglected for a very, very long time, and this is important money to help, like, reduce the wealth gap, create economic growth and development, allow people to access to opportunity and education, to decent health. All of those things are important, and losing that would be tremendously impactful, as well as getting that would be tremendously impactful. So either way, it is incredibly important for us to struggle over it.
Right. Well, it looks like there now seems to be a possibility. And by the way, climate change, too. And, I can recall when it's not that we've never been sensitive to these issues, certainly as black people. But, when people were, and I'm not disparaging the birds and the bees either, but I'm saying there was a way in which the environment was presented that did not seem to be impactful to us until, someone like Robert Bullard did dumping in Dixie, and all of a sudden we understood the whole question of environmental justice, the pollution of the environment, how it was impacting us. And then we got to know a lot more about the environment in general and what it really means. And I was just looking at a piece this morning. They were talking about a place in Senegal that they called the Venice of Africa. And, like, climate change is like wiping out, hitting and destroying. Really, Africa is going to take a disproportionate hit, and our communities are going to take a disproportionate hit. So it seems to me that they fighting up inside of that bill also to try to maintain some level of the climate change provisions is also important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think more and more and more, I was just thinking about how we organize our conferences. There was a time when we didn't put the environment so much into these conferences. Then after a while, environmental justice was a major piece. So I think we're going to be having climate change in as well. Let me conclude, Mayor Baraka, by just getting your assessment on what's happening, because there is a monumental struggle going on in this country. I say back in the day, we should talk about the dying gasp of white supremacy and how dangerous it would be. And it's unfortunately, it's playing out between the political parties to some degree. And it's a little disheartening to see that a change of administration has, in some ways, people talk about the fact that the Dems may see themselves being threatened in 2022, 2024. Biden's dipping poll numbers, things of that nature. And I guess one of the questions I raise is, to what degree does the side that is fighting for change have what's now being called a messaging deficit? And that is to say, this package is going to be significant. There was already an American Rescue package around COVID and so forth and so on. And yet, if the people don't know where it's coming from, or if it's not talked about, is there a danger, really, that the Democrats and, these MAGA Republicans will actually, get back in power?
Well, it's always a danger that happens. I mean, we still live here. I mean, a percentage of people voted, a large percentage of people voted for Donald Trump, even in New Jersey. So there's always a chance that happens. That's why the Democrats and the folks in power have to figure out you know, what's important. At some point, they have to have a strategy and not just, you know, the left is always at, and the progressives are always at each other's throats trying to prove who's more progressive than the next, which gives, you know, these people an opportunity to come up the middle and disempower all of us. I think it is important for people to understand our struggle is protracted, and we need to struggle for the things we can get and keep struggling for it. Just because you vote on a package and get a specific thing doesn't mean you stop. You have to stop there. You keep fighting and trying to get more and more and more. That's what you do. But at the expense of, you know, collapsing everything that has happened in the last 3 or 4 years, they definitely need to have a strategy and a compromise and come together and figure out what can be done now and get those things done. Other than that, it is going to hurt not just President Biden, but everybody down ballot.
Right. Which is important. I mean, and I only say that because I just think we're in a moment where we really, people talk about being woke. I think we really have to be woke. And, you know, and I offer that to some degree because of a critique, because I think these folks are too imprisoned by consultants who talk about probable voters and all this kind of madness and don't really emphasize participatory processes like you've installed and Mayor Lumumba have installed with the people's assemblies and trying to get people engaged, you know what I mean, and actively engaged around the clock as opposed to just looking at elections in and of itself and by itself. And yet our fate is tied up into this whole system, and I just hope we can just wake people up and break through some of this madness, because it's going to be really, really, really difficult if we don't. Mayor, I'm going to give you the last word just in terms of where you see Newark going. I'm obviously always touting Newark because I see the policies as being progressive and strong. Is there a new move, a new initiative, or is it just continuing to build on what you've already developed?
We're still pushing forward, brother. It's no new move. Everything is, you know, consistent, it's protracted. We're pushing forward, trying to do what we could do to make sure we, you know, improve the quality of life of the people who live here and fight for a better democracy.
Well, Gabral said that the people do not just struggle for ideas, but for an improvement in their material conditions. I know politically and ideologically you are revolutionary, you are progressive, but you certainly have taken that to heart. So we so appreciate the incredible work that
brother.
You're doing as mayor of Newark.
You got it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Not a problem, brother.
All right, that was Mayor Roz J. Baraka, and we're delighted to have him be here on WBAI the first of every month for a State of Newark Report. And, of course, you know, he's not just a local figure. He is a global, both national and global. He is, in my judgment, you know, you want to list progressive mayors. He's, to me, one of the top two or three progressive mayors in the whole United States of America. And so it's not just sentimental. We support Mayor Roz J. Baraka because of his administration, because of his policies. And we're delighted that he's willing to take time out to come on and be on the airways here at WBAI. We now want to go to our soapbox, which means you have an opportunity to call us right now. And we hope that you'll be woke on these questions and get your opinions on some of the issues that are facing us. I've talked specifically about two that I'm just interested in what your opinions are. There is a an election in New York tomorrow, but the nation is focused on Virginia and they're focused on Newark, on New Jersey, that is. New Jersey is a slightly different thing. I mean, what's in New Jersey has to do with the fact that typically there has not been a Democratic governor who has been able to be reelected. I didn't realize until I heard that figure the other day. It looks like the current governor is going to be in pretty good shape, and there seems to be some reasons why that's the case. But in Virginia, you heard Terry McAuliffe, who was like begging, pleading for this infrastructure bill to be passed as a lifeline. But you all likely have been following the debate. I just asked the question about this bill, the human infrastructure side of it, that began with $6 trillion down to $3.5 trillion, then to $1.7 trillion. And I asked Mayor Baraka, did he think it would be enough? And so the question is, to our audience, what do you think? You know, should the progressive hold out for more, or is holding out for more endangering, or what might be said is the perfect being the enemy of the good, and therefore risking nothing. And if there's nothing, what impact will that have, not only so much on the parties per se, but on the lives and the lives of the people? So I would like to get people's opinions on that. Call us at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. And it's a new administration. We lived under the Orange Man, Agent Orange. And, you know, I'm a little shocked that we find Biden's polls numbers slipping down to 42%, 43%. I mean, talk to me. Compared to the Orange Man, Agent Orange? I mean, when I look at a press conference, I see a press conference, I mean, being conducted a lot more differently than, you know, Jen Psaki. I mean, she treats people with respect. She's not being denigrating. She's not insulting reporters and all that kind of stuff. And there are regular reports on COVID. I mean, there is progress being made on COVID. At least people are being told to inject bleach. People are being told that, you know, you can take some weird concoction and it's going to heal you. And then you don't have really, you know, folks acting in a manner that is really, really, really terribly irresponsible. So I'm just wondering, why is it that poll numbers for Biden are slipping? And secondly, what does this mean? Are we now ready to see the ascension of the Orange Man and Agent Orange back in power again? Give us a call at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Willing to entertain some other questions as well, but these are the two primary questions that I'd like to take on, and we have plenty of time to do it. So the phones are open right now. You don't have to wait, and you can get your opinion in right now. 212-209-2877. This is the professor. This is the Soapbox. Again, delighted to have heard Mayor Roz J. Baraka and his perspectives, but we have a very highly sophisticated audience, politically very sharp at WBAI. And we may debate and disagree about some aspects of what we're dealing with. But by and large, you know, that's why I like to be on these airways, because I think we all want to go in the right direction. 212-209-2877 gets you into the conversation again. Why are Biden's poll numbers slipping so badly? And what is your position on this whole question of the stimulus, I mean, the packages that are being debated between the Progressive Caucus and Manchin and Sinema, the moderates? All right, we're going to go right to our listening audience right now. Good afternoon. This is the professor, and you're on the Soapbox. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Are you speaking to me?
Yes, I'm talking to you.
Good. Okay. My name is Pete. Okay, and I'm a first-time caller to WBAI, and I'm happy to do so.
Great.
Yes, been listening a long time. I just want to say I'm very untrustworthy of polls and poll numbers. You know, I don't know where they're coming from. I'm 75, going on 76. All my life, I've never gotten a call from any pollster, and I don't know of anyone. And I've obviously met a lot of people that has ever gotten a phone call from a pollster. So I don't know who they're calling, but anyway, if they say, and unfortunately people follow what polls say and they're influenced by them, you know. Oh, Biden's his numbers are falling, maybe he's not what we thought he was, and then they start talking amongst themselves. The next thing you know, Biden is out and we're right back in the trash, you know, that we were before. Okay, that's one thing that's off my chest. The other thing is, insofar as yeah, I just lost my train of thought.
Well, I was talking about the packages that are before the Congress of the United States. You got about $1.2 trillion.
Yes.
And then you got the $1.75 trillion now. You have two packages together, but they're significantly below what was initially talked about. And the question
absolutely.
Is, you know, the question is, do people still hold out, or do we take what we've got now and build on it? That's kind of the dilemma that I think people are facing.
Well, right now, frankly, I think that we should grab something, okay? Because people have to grab something. I mean, they need some infrastructure. They need jobs. They need the infrastructure at least. You know, and so you know the health care packages and everything else that they want. We're being held up. There's a gun to our heads. You know, do this, right? Or you know, come next election, blah blah blah. They're putting a gun to our heads again. The progressives, as you know, people refer to them, or that. You know, the good people that want to do good things, unfortunately, this is not their time. I just don't think it is, okay? Right. I wish it were, but I don't. I was very happy when Biden first came out with all the proposals. But and you know, as, insofar as I'm concerned, they all made sense. They still make sense today. The money was there, okay? If they can give trillions to the themselves a tax-free and forget about it, you know, to lower their and that's it. No one questions it. Then obviously they could do something. But this country did not run that way.
Right.
It's just not run the way.
Right.
The country is run the way it is. And right now we need jobs. We need.
So right now I'm going to use this. You're going to say the glass is half full, and a half a loaf is better than none. That's how I'm going to summarize it that way in terms of what your perspective
unfortunately,
is.
Unfortunately, yes, sir.
All right.
Yes,
okay. Got your opinion. Okay. Others can call it 212-209-2877. That is a good way of summing it up. You know, is the glass half full or is it half empty? Is a half a loaf better than no loaf at all? And to assess what will be the overall impact of a total of, I mean, it's quite a bit, actually, in terms of not billions, but trillions that are out there, is the question before our audience. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm doing fine.
Well, the last caller, he echoed everything that I would like to say. That, you know, Manchin and Sinema, they're not going anywhere, and the Democrats are going to mess around and mess around. They're going to come out with nothing, and then we're going to end up with Donald Trump again. I think they should just take what they can get now, put it out there, and then work for something else later on. They can always do that. You don't have to have everything. It's nice if they could get everything, but it's obvious that you can't. I just don't want to mess around and not come up with nothing.
Well, I think what's happening, is that the progressives have wanted to be sure of two things. Number one, they wanted to be sure that the bipartisan infrastructure plan, which is roads and bridges and so forth, as Mayor Baraka was talking about, got passed, and then there would not be agreement on the reconciliation bill that has all of the human infrastructure in it. You know, free college, extending the child tax credit, which is cutting into poverty in a major, major way, major investment in housing and so forth. One of the things that people, I think, also have to take in consideration is that Manchin and Sinema, and I talk bad about them all the time. I mean, I'm on their case, right? The fact of the matter is, one of the things they said is true. You know, they say, well, go elect more progressives. You know what I mean? Because one of the things you don't want to be in a situation where either one of them flip and they decide to become Republicans, and then we're really in bad shape. So we do have to, the cold reality is we do have to negotiate with Sinema and Manchin right now. And it seems that eventually there is a package that has been negotiated, and looking at what that package is becomes important. But I think it's important to, you know, I did a piece yesterday saying Manchin and Sinema are not the enemy, and people probably went upside the wall. The reality is there's not a single Republican, not one, not a single Republican, because their objection, they are obstructionists, white nationalists, white power obstructionists. They don't intend to vote for anything that they think is going to promote and aid and assist feeding the people. Look, appreciate your call, my friend. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello?
Hello. You're on the air.
Good. You know, you had a discussion 2 weeks ago about, what's that singer's name? The rapper who was accused of being a pedophile. Who's going to jail?
R. Kelly, yes.
R. Kelly. what I wanted to say about that is America is built on raping. You look at the complexion of a lot of these black people in this country, and they go all complexion. And where did that come from? White men raping black women because they owned them or they did it anyway. You look at the U.S. In the Air Force Academy. They were raping the white women in the Air Force Academy so bad that they changed the rules in the Air Force Academy, and they did not prosecute anybody. In the U.S. Army, they were raping black, they were raping women in the U.S. Army so bad that they gave statistics on it. They said there was 84%.
So your point is
84% of the sexual cases in there was rape of women.
So your point.
Somebody else.
But what's your point?
The point is that this country has a lot of that. There's like 9,000 Native American women that are missing. 3,000 black women are missing.
They are. So I'm not.
So I'm saying that.
Give me your conclusion. Is
that's a part of American psychic?
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. We've been educated on that at least. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. What I don't want to say is, without checking all of that, the fact that no white people went to jail does not, so therefore we should not deal with an R. Kelly. I mean, I don't go with that kind of, well, they got away with it, so therefore, no, I don't go that route. I want everybody. It's zero tolerance. Black, white, red, yellow, brown, I don't care who it is. But I'm not getting to a situation as well. The white folks got away with it, so therefore I don't deal that way. I'm one that's a universal ethic is how I see that. But that's not the major thing I want to talk about. But you're allowed to talk about whatever you want to do. This is WBAI, and this is the professor on the soapbox. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes, my name is John Hale. I'm in Long Island. I think I've finally been woke up by Donald Trump and his minions. They tried to overthrow the government. That has to be addressed, but we have to come out to vote and make sure that the Republican Party or racists in the Republican Party, we have to make it impossible for them to win by coming out in mass continually. Not only black people, but Spanish, Jewish, all Americans that have a concern for their kids to be at peace and for this country to grow and prosper, and that's what I have to say.
An interesting point, and that is because we know that voter suppression laws are being put in place all across this country. Not only are they putting in voter suppression laws to make it more difficult, and they are clear. Sometimes they don't even disguise it. And we want them black people, because the black people are going to vote Democrat. And we don't want them, to vote. And we're going to make it as hard as possible. We're going to make it seriously hard for them to vote. But not only that, they're now saying, since we're under this antiquated electoral college system, all right, well, even if it comes out a certain way, we will elect the secretaries of state and the people who can go in and goes and say, no, that is not the way it was supposed to be. That's what they wanted Pence to do. Pence, had a momentary moment of conscience. And that a lot of these people, frankly, these Republicans stood up in these various places and said, no, the election was fair and clear and straight. They want to get rid of that so that even if you do vote in a certain way, they want to be in a position to make the election come out the way they want it to. That is fascism. That is fascism full blown. It's white minority rule. But one of the ways to check it is not to be discouraged. No matter what barriers they put in, ain't no let nobody turn us around. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. Is that me?
Yeah, that's you, of course.
Okay. You know something? I agree with a lot of what you say, but I don't agree with a lot of what you say.
Oh, that's good. Fine.
Because what happened is that you make yourself so Democrat that you can't see the difference when Democrats do something wrong.
Oh, no, 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 no. Let me make clear. Let me be clear. If the Democrats do something I don't like, I will definitely criticize it. I am not wed to the Democratic Party.
Okay, let me just say this, and then I'm going to hang up, and you can answer me.
Go ahead.
Off the line. Even though I'm a supporter, I don't want to take too much time.
Okay, go right ahead.
What happened? Joe Biden is a pharmaceutical man, a war man, and an establishment Democrat. I know when he come in, the pharmaceutical was going to rain on us. They wasn't going to have no control, no nothing at all on them. And right now, you on the same station that you are on, if you were listening a year ago and some months, you'd hear that COVID is coming. And when it comes, they're going to give us passport and they're going to give us vaccine. Everybody was ignoring it when Gary is the people that come with him, his guests, everybody, and they were telling what's going to happen. And that they say the kid, they don't want to give the kids from 6 months old the vaccine. So when they bring the pandemic, they're going to beg for it. See, they reach down to the age. A 6 month old right now, that's where they reach now, and they're gonna.
So your issue is the whole effort is to install Biden so that they could inject and bring the COVID so the pharmaceutical industry could become rich. That's your basic premise.
No, I can't explain myself. I'm not that dumb. The position is, this is not new. And this is not what they're telling us about. All the other scientists, the three-time Nobel Prize winner, all these scientists are stupid. If you see something...
I can't argue with that. I can't argue. And I don't want to get into a whole other argument about how stupid it's like the climate change, right? You know, we got people out there denying that climate change is real, that global warming is real, because you can find one or two. In fact, you got one in Florida. You got a doctor heading up the equivalent of the Center for Disease Control in Florida, who's black. And so I know there are a whole bunch of people grabbing, but there's a black guy. For every one black person you can show me, I can show you thousands of black medical people and doctors who are saying, we are scientists. We know what this is all about. But I don't really want, we've already had that argument. I don't want to engage that one. Let me say this. Biden has been shocking in that he has been working very closely with Bernie Sanders. Sanders would say that. I must say, he's a moderate, he's a centrist, and so forth and so on. But he's been pushing many of the kind of programs that Bernie Sanders has been talking about. He's proven to be much more progressive than I thought he would be. The problem is the filibuster. The problem is Sinema and Manchin. I mean, they're there, but on the other hand, what can we do about it except I do believe he threw the gauntlet down. They said, hey, you don't like it? Elect some more progressives. And I think that's what progressives should do. But that's challenging. That's more than lip service. That's more than radio revolutionaryism. It is about really getting out there and finding those spaces and places where we can do the work in order to elect more people so we're not held hostage by Sinema and Manchin. But at the end of the day, if there were a couple of Republicans, one or two or three or four or five, who would just have the sense to talk about the kind of programs that we're talking about? Because at least what we're talking about with Sinema and Manchin is they're talking about less of a good thing. The Republicans are talking about none of a good thing, period. And so that has to be put into the equation when you think about it. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Good.
Good. Hey, we were talking about the infrastructure bill earlier, and I just wanted to come back and get your opinion on H.R. 40. H.R. 40, we know, passed out of committee, but there hasn't been much talk or thought about, you know, reparations. So I was just wondering if you could speak on that for a second.
Well, I certainly can. I mean, H.R. 40 is we're pushing very hard. We have now close to 200 co-sponsors. The original bill under Congressman John Conyers never had more than 50. We have 23 co-sponsors on the Senate side. We are pushing hard for a floor vote. I must say that we have great disappointment at this level, at this point, that the Democratic leadership, including James Clyburn, who's someone I happen to have some respect for, but he's not taking it as seriously as we think he ought to, because he's the one who has to whip the votes. We need 218 votes to bring it to the floor. We have assurances as of right now that there's something like 209 who would. That's an overwhelming number of people. So we're saying to Clyburn and to Nancy Pelosi and our friend from up here, Jeffries, as well as Hoyer, you go get the rest of those votes and bring it to the floor and pass it. That's what we're demanding or asking or appealing at this particular point in time. So we're putting the pressure on, but the reality is that it will not get any Republican votes in the Senate. None. And so there's a challenge there. So at the end of the day, we will end up pushing for an executive order with Biden. And so we're saying, you know, if it doesn't pass the House, if it passes the House, fine. Ultimately, we will be looking for an executive order. Let me rush quickly to a couple of more callers. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Yes. Hi. This is Lisa from Westchester.
Yes.
So I really think that we need to hold strong. The Democrats, you're right, Biden has surprised me. He has really, you know, tried to hold to his promises. Not every time, you know, talk about, oh, he's not for defund the police. And even though those are the people who went out there and mobilized the vote for him. But the thing is that, you know, we have to stand strong because, you know, we think this is a large package. And as far as I'm concerned, this is the bare minimum. Like, we're giving up things like, you know, paid leave for people, like as if that's some kind of luxury. So, no, we're not. We shouldn't give up and say, oh, let's pass it now. And no, get rid of Manchin. Get rid of the other guy.
Whoa. Let's stop a minute. You say get rid of Manchin and get rid of Sinema?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but the point is, but hold on quickly. Let's have a reality check here. That is the problem. Okay. If you get rid of Manchin and Sinema, you get absolutely nothing at all. Period. And let me finally say this, because this package, when Biden, Bernie Sanders, who's no scrub, when they say this total package between the COVID package, the 1.577 million package, it will be the largest package since.
But they ain't done nothing, Ron. Because they haven't been doing anything.
Well, that may be true. That may be true. But what I'm saying is
they
progressives.
They dropped
$3 trillion, but what is going to be in there is still going to be transformational. Jayapal and all of them would not say that if they didn't believe that.
One more thing, though, I do want to say that you brought up that is so critical. The Democrats do not know how to speak about their program.
That's right. I agree with that. I got to go off there. Let's continue this discussion. I believe that you're right. They don't know how to talk about it. But this is a classic case of it is half full and a half loaf is better than none. Anyway, look, I've enjoyed it so much. Great conversation. There were many, many of you are on the line as well. That means the soapbox is rocking. But we can continue next week here on Vantage Point, 99.5 FM Pacifica, WBI Pacifica Network, in collaboration with YCRadio.org. The professor, we'll see you again next week.